Speaker Madigan, President Harmon, Leader Durkin, Leader Brady, Lieutenant Governor Stratton, my fellow constitutional officers, members of the General Assembly, distinguished guests, and people of Illinois. I want to begin by thanking the First Lady of Illinois, my wife, MK. With quiet strength and with little fanfare, you've worked hard over the last year to make this state more inclusive and welcoming to all, from DuQuoin to Springfield to Chicago, caring about and advocating for some of the most vulnerable people in our state. And I want to thank you for making some important aspects of Illinois shine once again. To now former Senate President John Cullerton, I want to express my heartfelt gratitude for your many years of service to our state. You have always fought for your constituents and for all of the people of Illinois with a clear devotion, with a vision to advance this state as a national leader in healthcare, education, and civil rights, and with a willingness to listen and seek compromise at just the right moments. John, you've brought kindness and humor in even the toughest days in the General Assembly, and everyone on both sides of the aisle in this chamber will miss you as you embark on a new chapter in your life with your beloved wife, Pam, who has made so many personal sacrifices over the last 41 years, as many unsung heroic spouses do. On behalf of a grateful state, we thank you both. And in turn, I look forward to working with our new Senate President, a friend and ally for more than a quarter century, and a longtime champion of the Fair Tax Amendment, Don Harmon. My friends, it has been a little over a year since I was inaugurated governor. I have a real abiding love for the work that I do every day, and a deep respect for how fundamentally humbling it is to serve in this office. Illinois is a state with a grand history of profound impact on our nation and our world. We've sent four transformative presidents to the White House. We were the first state to ratify two of the most important amendments to the U.S. Constitution, one abolishing slavery and another one granting women the right to vote. The first cell phone was invented here. So was the first television remote control and the first widely used internet browser. What all these things have in common is that they were the product of the talented and forward-thinking people of our state. Illinois is great because our people are great. That's why it's been important to me as governor to listen, truly to hear people from across our state who come with passion and perspective that's different than my own. Keeping an open door policy means that I've been rewarded with a wealth of constructive feedback, advice, and help from Democrats and Republicans alike, an indication that perhaps here in Illinois, we are not as divided in our values and goals as some would have you believe. Our state has challenges. We inherited a mess that was years in the making, and it had bipartisan roots. On day one, it was clear to me that we had a government infrastructure that had withered from neglect and a lack of public trust. At times, it seemed like even the most basic things, like getting a government-issued iPad to work, were hard to do. But one thing I know in life is that if you want to make profound change in a broken system, you have to do the next good thing that needs to get done. Big problems become big problems when you let small problems sit. Let me share one small example, the story of the Thompson Center flags. Sometime last summer, a watchful Twitter citizen noticed that the flags flying outside of state government building in Chicago, the James R. Thompson Center, were hanging a bit haphazardly from their rods, dangling by their last threads. I have to admit, I didn't notice it. And in fact, no one among the 2,000 people working there seemed to notice it. Maybe because you could spend all day noticing things dangling by their last threads in the Thompson Center if you tried. So we did a little research and we found that the flags used to be serviced by a small fourth generation family-owned business in Chicago that has tended Illinois' flags for a century's worth of parades and state visits and state championships. But during the last few years, you guessed it, the flag company stopped getting paid. Like so many other small businesses in Illinois that were caught up in the budget impasse, this company did their best, but the Thompson Center flags ended up falling into disrepair. Once the dangling flags were brought to my attention, we contacted the company and heard their story. We immediately paid them what they were owed, and the next weekend they came with a huge ladder truck and they fixed it so that our state's flags flew straight once again. As it turned out, fixing those flags made people really happy. In fact, it's the most pleased that Twitter has ever been with me. I think it's because this simple story about a flag at the Thompson Center is a metaphor for where state government has been and where it's going. And it reminded me that we have a choice about how we tell our story. We could spend our time reliving every past failure, every bygone insult and fight. Or we could fix things and be ardent voices on behalf of an agenda of opportunity in the years ahead. The last year has shown what we can do when we roll up our sleeves and work together to restore stability to our state. Those who would shout doom and gloom might be loud, using social media bots and paid hacks to advance their false notions, but they are not many. You see, we're wresting the public conversation in Illinois back from people concerned with one thing and one thing only, predicting total disaster, spending hundreds of millions of dollars promoting it, and then doing everything in their power to make it happen. I'm here to tell the carnival barkers, the doomsayers, the paid professional critics, the state of our state is growing stronger each day. Don't believe me? Well, consider these facts. Today, the Illinois economy supports 6.2 million jobs. This is the most jobs on record for our state, and we now have the lowest unemployment rate in history. Last year, for the first time in nearly 20 years, every major region in our state was growing simultaneously. And even more remarkably, communities in southern Illinois, like Carbondale, have led that growth. Over the past year, Illinois has reduced its unemployment rate more than all of the top 20 most populated states in the nation, and more than our Midwestern peers. (clears throat) 237 Illinois businesses from all over the state made Inc. magazine's list of fastest growing businesses in the nation, including companies in Columbia and Rock Island, St. Charles and O'Fallon, Taylorville and Chicago. Student applications to Illinois' public universities increased last fall for the first time in many years. Illinois is the second largest producer of computer science degrees in the nation, accounting for nearly 10% of all computer science degrees awarded in the entire United States. Our great state has an awful lot that's going right. And just look what a difference a year can make. we passed a bipartisan, truly balanced budget on time, with renewed investments in job creation, cradle-to-career education, and physical and mental health care. Even the credit rating agencies and financial analysts described a distinct improvement in our fiscal stability, and investors took notice and lowered our state's borrowing rate. A balanced budget is an important accomplishment, but it's more than just about fiscal discipline. It's a moral document that reflects our values as a state. 13 years ago, Bonnie Brackett and her family opened the doors on a new family business, Heartland Kids Early Learning Center in Marion, Illinois. Over the years, hundreds of Williamson County's babies and toddlers have gone through her program, which is one of the top ranked in our state. But as with hundreds of childcare providers across Illinois, and more than 10,000 parents, the budget crisis became Bonnie's crisis and disrupted families across the area. At one point, Bonnie's staff dropped to a low of 14 teachers from a high of 21. Bonnie, one of the only three childcare centers in Marion, almost had to close her doors. But this year, with the increase in state funding for childcare that we announced in December, Bonnie is not only able to stay in business, but has a plan for teacher training, rebuilding enrollment, classroom improvements, and even beginning the process of hiring more staff. Now, thanks to our bipartisan investments, dozens more parents in Marion can go to work, and Bonnie can get back to the business that matters most to her, caring for the children of Southern Illinois. Bonnie Brackett is here today, and we want to thank her for all that she does for our community, for our kids, and for our state. Thank you, Bonnie. For the first time in a decade, we passed a bipartisan infrastructure bill. Rebuild Illinois will create and support 500,000 jobs in this state as we fix our aging and crumbling roads and bridges, bring broadband to parts of this state that are internet deserts, as well as modernize our hospitals, our community centers, our state police facilities, our universities and colleges, all the things that keep us going and growing. Over the last several months, I've had the pleasure of attending many local events celebrating the jobs and projects that Rebuild Illinois is bringing to our communities. Most times those events are attended by legislators and mayors and local officials of both political parties. And it's clear that when we stand together in front of the public and talk about what we're doing together to literally rebuild bridges and roads and childcare centers and schools, we restore a little bit of the public's trust that's been lost in government institutions at all level in the past few years. Rebuild Illinois is about more than just roads, bridges, and universities. It's about jobs, middle-class careers with wages and benefits, the kind of jobs that help you raise a family. And together, we did more to make these jobs more inclusive and diverse by investing in the Illinois Works program to recruit new construction apprentices and set strong goals for our public works projects to include diverse employees. With me today is Reggie Marizetz, Jr., a first-year apprentice with Laborers Local 165 in Peoria. Reggie fell in love with hands-on work early in his life, and it's his apprenticeship where he's learning all the skills to succeed, not just now, but for decades to come. Reggie intends to become a full-time journeyman and later to pursue his lifelong dream, opening a father-son construction company with his dad. Reggie, please stand so that we can cheer for your hard work and for your bright future. Over the past 6 years, in addition to our expansion of apprenticeships, Rebuild Illinois will transform our infrastructure. even as we create a lot more opportunities for Reggie and thousands of young people just like him, with steady work that will help make sure that our economy works for everyone. Last year, we made enormous strides toward equality and opportunity when Democrats and Republicans came together to legalize adult-use cannabis with the most equity-centric legislation in the nation, which will result in 63,000 new jobs and new opportunities for entrepreneurs, especially those from communities that have been left behind. It gives us a chance to collect tax revenue from the residents of Wisconsin and Missouri and Iowa and Indiana. And most importantly, we're giving a second chance to hundreds of thousands of people who had a low-level cannabis conviction or arrest on their record. The Bipartisan License to Work Act that I signed 2 weeks ago ended the practice of revoking driver's licenses for unpaid parking tickets and fines, because often the only way that someone has to pay their parking ticket is if they can travel to work. We restored driving privileges to more than 50,000 people. When public policy makes it a crime to be poor, it ends up costing us all. The situation you may be born into, the struggles that you may be born with, even the struggles that you never expected to be your own, should not be allowed to write your entire future. We've also begun the long work of tackling our pension problems. In addition to expanding our state pension buyout program, in the fall veto session, we accomplished something that eluded governors and general assemblies for almost 75 years. By consolidating 650 downstate and suburban first responder pension systems, which will alleviate local property tax burdens and strengthen the funds that offer a decent retirement to our police and our firefighters. Maybe more significantly, the bill that we passed was supported by both a leading progressive representative, Will Guzzardi, and an outspoken conservative senator, Dan McConkie. All I can say is, anything is possible. We did big things to help people, real people who live and work here every day. We raised the minimum wage. We advanced equal pay for women and minorities, provided millions of Illinoisans relief from high interest on consumer debt, and expanded health care to tens of thousands more people across our state. We are reaffirming that our most important commitments are to our children and their education. Mark my words, Illinois will be the best state in the nation to raise a young family. Today, 20,000 more kids are getting childcare, and thousands more are going to preschool. To address our state's shortage of teachers, we raised the minimum teacher salary so we can retain educators in Illinois, and we made it more attractive for out-of-state teachers to move here. We made it easier for high school graduates to get a skilled wage by expanding vocational training and career and technical education for the first time in a decade. And after years of decline, we are turning around university student enrollment by making college more affordable, expanding scholarships to an additional 10,000 college-bound students. And this fall, more than half of the families in our state will be eligible for free tuition at the University of Illinois. We made healthcare more available and more affordable. Working with Senator Andy Menar, we capped out-of-pocket insulin costs at $100 for a 30-day supply so that no one in Illinois has to decide between buying food and paying for the medicine they need to stay alive. We expanded insurance coverage for mammograms and reproductive health, and we protected people who need treatment for life-threatening allergic reactions. Overall, the number of opioid-related deaths are declining. We diminished dependence on opioids by reforming the medical cannabis program to cover chronic pain conditions, and we're focused on using evidence-based practices to reduce racial disparities as we continue to battle the opioid crisis. In the face of the resurgences of measles and mumps and other diseases, we restored federal funding of our state immunization program, which was shut down under the previous administration. We raised the age to buy cigarettes and vaping products to 21 so that we can reduce youth tobacco use. We stood up for human rights and civil rights. When we put Donald Trump on notice that Illinois will not be complicit in his shameful and draconian immigration policies. We opted in to welcoming refugees to Illinois, continuing a proud tradition in this state that stretches back to my great-grandparents, welcomed here a century ago after fleeing anti-Semitism in Europe. We invested in public safety by expanding the number of new Illinois state troopers, and we're building a new state police forensics lab so that we can solve crimes faster and address the backlog of DNA testing of rape evidence, because crime victims shouldn't have to wait for justice. And we stopped badmouthing the state and started passing laws that make Illinois more attractive for businesses and jobs. Working across the aisle, we brought tax relief for 300,000 small businesses through the phase out of the corporate franchise tax. And we laid the groundwork for new high-paying tech jobs by opening new business incubators, by incentivizing the building of new data centers, and by investing $100 million in a University of Illinois and University of Chicago partnership that will make Illinois the quantum computing capital of the world. Jobs and businesses are coming to this state because we are investing in the things that have always made us great: a skilled workforce, modern infrastructure, great public schools, top research universities, a robust agricultural sector, and a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship literally built into the steel frames of our skyscrapers, themselves a symbol of Illinois' ambition and belief in the future. By almost every measure over the past year, we've improved the financial well-being, health, education, and safety of the residents of Illinois, and we did it together. And now we have to work together to confront a scourge that has been plaguing our political system for far too long. We must root out the purveyors of greed and corruption in both parties, whose presence infects the bloodstream of government. It's no longer enough to sit idle while under-the-table deals, extortion, or bribery persist. Protecting that culture or tolerating it is no longer acceptable. We must take urgent action to restore the public's trust in our government. That's why we need to pass real, lasting ethics reform this legislative session. Honest members of the General Assembly from both sides of the aisle have some good ideas, and so do I. It's time to end the practice of legislators serving as paid lobbyists. In fact, it's time to end the for-profit influence peddling among all elected officials at every level of government in Illinois. Disclosure of conflicts of interest and punishment for breaching them must be included in any ethics package for us to truly clean up government. Most states have a revolving door provision for legislators, and it's time for Illinois to join them. Elected officials shouldn't be allowed to retire and immediately start lobbying their former colleagues. It's wrong, and it's got to stop. There are many more ethics reforms that must be addressed this spring, and I expect the legislature's bipartisan ethics commission to issue its report in the next 8 weeks. Restoring the public's trust is of paramount importance. Let's not let the well-connected and the well-protected work the system while the interests of ordinary citizens are forgotten. There is too much that needs to be accomplished to lift up all of the people of Illinois. The overwhelming majority of people involved with government and public policy and politics here in Illinois truly just want what is best for this state. From legislators to citizen activists to reporters, they chisel away at intractable problems and put their shoulders into making real, lasting institutional change. They don't get distracted or dejected, whether they're battling poverty, fighting for increased education funding, or fixing the unglamorous but essential problems of our state's IT infrastructure. Illinois is full of people who love our state and are willing to work earnestly every day to fight for her, which is why we have to be committed to the hard work of changing another aspect of the political culture in this state that has too often rewarded a go-along-to-get-along attitude at the expense of truly ethical conduct. When I took office a year ago, I hired people who came from all walks of life, all different backgrounds, who were diverse in gender, in race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, geography, and life experience, and whose only loyalty is to good ideas and good results. And I took heat for it from some who had been here a very long time. Many were incredulous that I wasn't just automatically hiring the same old faces that get jobs year in and year out. A commitment to diversity and inclusion is not just a talking point for me, and I hope that the past year has proven that. I have an administration that looks far more like the state that we represent than any that has come before it. I have elevated talented people who have been overlooked for far too long, and our state is doing better because of it. Change needs to happen, and much of this change needs to happen outside of the scope of legislation. It's about how we, as public officials, conduct ourselves in private that also matters. Common sense and basic decency need to prevail in the everyday interactions that make government work. People need to treat disgusting suggestions with disgust. The old patronage system needs to die, finally and completely. The input of women and people of color need to be treated as essential to decision making, not as some token show of diversity. Bit by bit, inch by inch, I am working hard to reverse the harm that has been done to people and communities that have been left behind over many generations by government policies and elected officials who were content to simply ignore them. I remind myself every day that I have obligations not just to the current people of Illinois, but to the many people who preceded us, who were discriminated against, harmed, treated as lesser, and forgotten. Lasting damage that echoes through too many communities today. We are obligated to make our future more equitable and fair. I came into this office with the message that I am committed to doing things differently in my administration. A lot of folks didn't believe me a year ago. Now you can see how far we all can come in a year, even when the work still remains. It's time for us to recommit ourselves to the hard work of bringing prosperity and opportunity to all communities in Illinois through a fairer tax system, job creation, education and job training programs, childcare and preschool, and a focus on building essential tools of success, such as high-speed internet, in all corners of our state. This spring, working with legislators, we will begin the long path toward a fairer criminal justice system. That starts with phasing out cash bail and following many of the recommendations made by the Bipartisan Criminal Justice Reform Commission, created by my predecessor, most of whose ideas were never adopted because of the rancor and dysfunction. Our spring agenda must also address the pressing issue of adopting new clean energy legislation that reduces carbon pollution, promotes renewable energy, and accelerates electrification of our transportation sector. We saw the effects of climate change right here in Illinois last year with a polar vortex, devastating floods, record lake levels, and emergency declarations in more than a third of Illinois' counties. Urgent action is needed. But let me be clear. The old ways of negotiating energy legislation are over. It's time to put consumers and climate first. I am not going to sign an energy bill written by the utility companies. Property taxes in Illinois are simply too high, and that's why it's time to put the best ideas to work from both sides of the aisle. Local governments continue to max out their levies even when they don't need to. There are perverse incentives in state law that encourage that. We can change the law to support local governments and lower property taxes. And with nearly 7,000 units of government in Illinois, it's time to empower local taxpayers and voters to consolidate or eliminate them. These changes, along with our landmark pension reform that consolidated police and firefighter pensions, can make a serious dent in property taxes. Today in Illinois, we are governing with our heads and our hearts. In a time when cynicism has too often become the rule rather than the exception, we're proving that we really can make progress. We're showing the rest of the nation that pragmatic, progressive leadership is good, and putting our state back on the side of working families is important. A year ago, I shared a story at my inauguration. It was also about flags, about how a couple in Barrington, Illinois, had their pride flag stolen from their backyard and replaced with an American flag. Bigots wrapping themselves in a veil of patriotism are an increasingly familiar sight these days, and it's a dangerous trend. But the community fought back. A neighbor, Kim Fillion, upon hearing about the incident, put a pride flag in her yard in solidarity. And then suddenly lots of people were asking for them, and she was giving out pride flags to everyone in Barrington. They were popping up in yards all over the neighborhood. Kim told the news at the time, "Frankly, I've grown weary of this, of all this hate. And I gotta say, it just seemed like there was one thing that I could do that I had control of." I've thought a lot about that story this past year. It reminds me of the fundamental goodness and decency of the people who live here in Illinois and about how hard they will fight for each other. It reminds me that we all ought to think a little like Kim Fillion every day to remember the things that we have control of. So this past June, I asked Secretary of State Jesse White to fly a pride flag over the Illinois State Capitol for the first time in our history. After all, we have a choice about how we tell our story, and I want our Illinois story to be one of hope, inclusion, opportunity, and kindness. I want it to be inspired every day by the fundamental goodness of the people who live and work here, and who struggle so hard for a fair shot. Those are good ideals to live by. Those are good ideals to govern by. Let's all try to remember them in the year ahead. Thank you.
This is live coverage of Governor J.B. Pritzker's State of the State address to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly on Illinois Public Television and Illinois Public Radio. I'm Jack Butcher, along with Amanda Vinicky of WTTW in Chicago and Rich Miller of CapitalFacts.com. The governor kind of got an early start out of the gate, so he joined the speech in progress at the top of the hour.
He was raring to go, man. He wanted to get to that speech. It was a pretty good speech, I thought. What did you think?
What are your main takeaways, Amanda?
So he really spent the bulk of that speech celebrating, almost selling Illinois. Within that, he got a couple of jabs in at his predecessor, former governor, of course, Bruce Rauner. And then the latter half of it, more forward-thinking. We saw people really appreciate, I think, when he talked about dealing with the Scrooge that of Illinois politics and particularly at the Capitol, and that is ethics. Something that I thought interesting that he didn't focus on that we were anticipating, but he's got that budget address coming up to do plenty of it, is his proposed graduated income tax that would require amending the Constitution. I really only heard a suggestion here or there about a fair tax. He didn't focus on that really at all.
No, I expect that'll happen during the budget speech next month.
But a series of victory laps on things like the Capitol bill, $45 billion over 6 years, bipartisan support for that, cannabis legalization for recreational use. He talked about the minimum wage, a number of the things that he got done in what, you know, by all accounts was a terrific first year.
Right. Now, as long as you agree with what he did. But even if you don't agree with what he did, you have to concede that he really got a lot done last year. Some of that stuff I forgot about. I mean, it's like, I do this for a living and I forgot about some of that.
Well, minimum wage was in the first couple of weeks of the term.
Well, which was huge when you think about it. I mean, they fought over a 10 cent an hour minimum wage increase 10 years ago. And now, I mean, it went up January 1st by a buck, right? It's going up July 1st.
Again in July, it keeps on going up in increments.
Mm-hmm. He did talk about, of course, about ethics reform. And, of course, and with this week's headlines about a former state senator pleading guilty to bribery charges. That's on everybody's mind up here. He talked about ending the revolving door for lawmakers to immediately become lobbyists.
I thought it was important that he had a few very specific proposals that he strongly supported.
We haven't gotten a lot of detail on that front prior to this speech. He's just sort of said, I don't approve of anybody doing bad, breaking the law, corruption, everybody should behave well, and I do. That's really all he said until this point. So that was, I think, significant that he came out and said, no, we don't want this practice of legislators immediately then becoming lobbyists. We still, of course, don't have a lot of detail. That's fine. It's a speech. But we now at least know where he stands on some of these issues. So again, revolving door. He also talked about banning legislators from working as lobbyists and elected officials otherwise, and also more disclosure about potential conflicts of interest.
Yeah, he has come out in support of House Republican leader Jim Durkin's bill in a recent past, which would force disclosure even of law firm clients if they have a potential to create a conflict of interest.
Because right now, it's really pretty incredible. Somebody might not vote on a bill, they'll abstain, and you have no clue why. Maybe they don't like the bill and they just took a walk. Maybe it's because they have some sort of very vested interest and there's no way for the members of the public to know.
Or more importantly, they vote on the bill.
And we don't know that either.
Correct.
And he touched upon the other thing, of course, that is a huge issue looming over the entire budget, and that's pension reform. He talked about the downstate firefighters and police reforms that was passed, but the overall, you know, pension budget deficit is $137.3 billion for all five of the public employee pension programs here.
It's a big problem, but again, that is more for the budget address to deal with than it is right now. But I'm sure he'll get faulted for not saying more about it.
Well, he did say that he wants to take aim at property taxes. I think given public anger about how much they're paying in property taxes, he almost needed to. You're going to hear that call from Republicans certainly time and time again. While he said that, I believe he said it's going to make a serious dent, both the local pension consolidation measure that passed this year, and then he also called for allowing local government units to consolidate, to merge, or to be eliminated directly.
To allow voters to initiate that too, which I think is really
a platform for Rauner as well. Actually.
Right, but I think it's the first time he's really come out in favor of that. I could be mistaken, but that is big. They've done this in a couple of counties, a couple of townships, what have you, but they really haven't done it statewide. But they've had their their test runs, I think, in McHenry and Lake as well. It's probably time for it to go statewide.
Rich Miller, thanks very much for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. We certainly appreciate your insights and expertise. We're going to make way in just a moment for the new Senate President, Don Harmon, here on Illinois Lawmakers. And a word along the way to our master control operators and radio and TV. We expect this will be a one-hour edition of the program going out at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Amanda, as we were talking a little earlier, we're still waiting for the big shoe to drop, and that is the governor's budget message coming up 3 weeks from today.
We most certainly are waiting for that. That's the big bucks for us reporters, for anybody that wants to know the direction that the state is taking, because, of course, where you direct money in programs and how that is going to be funded. The governor talked a lot about the wonderful things that he believes are happening in Illinois, everything from funding universities, from scholarships that allow students to go. For example, he just really kind of forced the hand of the University of Illinois to allow students to come in there more. Early childcare, but guess what? All of that costs money, and particularly given the pension debt that you're talking about, it's not as if Illinois has a whole lot extra of that lying around.
And a familiar face now joining us on Illinois Lawmakers, but in an entirely new role, the new Senate President of the state of Illinois, Senator Don Harmon.
Thanks for having me back.
Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you.
Your takeaways from today's speech by the governor, a lot of discussion of the accomplishments of the first year, but there's still an awful lot to do.
There is, but to have a governor who is the lead cheerleader for the state is so refreshing. For him to run through the laundry list of all the things that are going well, the most jobs in history, the lowest unemployment rate, we need a governor who's telling the rest of the world what's going right in Illinois.
He alluded to, of course, the proposal for the graduated income tax. Everything in his budget proposals, balancing the budget, dealing with pension reform, all of that is contingent upon voters passing that in November, but barely a mention of it today.
I think it was implicit in almost everything that he said. The fair tax is critical for to put our state on sound fiscal footing. We've known that for a long time. Modernizing our tax code, making it more fair, generating the revenue we need while also delivering tax relief to middle-class families. That's how Illinois gets out of this.
What about the proposal for trying to get rid of and dismantle the 7,000 or more units of local government around the state? One of the big reasons that property taxes are so high.
We have to look at all of the different governments, but we have to remember that they all provide a service of one sort or another. So we need to make sure the critical services are being taken care of. The truth of the matter is our property tax dilemma is driven primarily by the way we fund schools and the fact that we push most of the funding for kindergarten through high school onto our local property taxpayers because the state doesn't do what it needs to do. Again, another reason why the fair tax is so important. We could generate the statewide revenue and start living up to our longstanding obligations.
Clearly, the governor was able to get through many of his major initiatives in his first year in office. This year, talking things like local government consolidation, you've been around for a while. That is not something that legislators are prone to vote for. Many of them come from those units of local government. In fact, is there a chance that can happen?
I think with gubernatorial leadership, there is a chance and there is a discussion. I have actually one of the few members of the General Assembly to have successfully abolished some units of local government. We need to be judicious. We need to recognize that it's not just the government, the services that people we represent depend upon. We can't leave them high and dry without those services, but if there's a more effective and efficient way to deliver them, we should be looking at it.
He called for an end to the scourge of corruption in the state capitol, here in the politics at the state house. He had a number of ideas on that. One of them was ending the revolving door for lawmakers to become lobbyists. A lot of states do that. Illinois does not.
They do, and you know, I've long been troubled by the appearance when you're a member of the General Assembly on Friday and you're a lobbyist on Monday. That's a problem and one we should tackle. I appreciate the way the governor framed the issue.
Why hasn't that happened before? Can you help to explain to people why this has been the practice in Illinois for so long? Does it take something like just yesterday, of course, one of your former colleagues pleading guilty to bribery to force that issue?
I really don't think the Sandoval plea is representative of the way most anybody else in the General Assembly conducts themselves. He was accused of taking bribes, not of lobbying.
Very different situation.
That said, we have a citizen legislature. That's an important ingredient in what we do. People who come down here at great sacrifice to themselves tend to develop an expertise in government, and they are given opportunities to continue that practice in a different role. We should respect that, but also recognize that you can't be a member one day and a lobbyist the next.
Now, you're somebody who's been at the forefront at times on energy legislation. We heard the governor say this is a priority. He wants to get it done this year. What do you look for in a renewable energy bill? It seems as if there's actually the renewables industry themselves can't even come to an agreement on what needs to happen in that space.
Well, Illinois has become a national leader in renewable energy. We've really done a good job, and we're transforming the economy in different parts of the state. You see the wind farms and the solar farms. There are other new creative ideas. We should be driving investment there. It creates good jobs, good high-paying union jobs. It's good for the community, for the tax base. Any sort of transition is difficult, but we need to create an environment where the goals of the environmentalists to reach a carbon-free energy sector can meet with the needs of the renewable developers to finance and build the projects. We're working through some of the rough edges between the competing groups. I think their goals are all the same. It's just they're coming at it from different perspectives.
How do you do that without Exelon and ComEd as part of those negotiations? They are the leaders in the energy industry. How do you come to a bill if they're not there?
Well, Exelon especially is the owner of the large nuclear fleet that is so critical to our overall energy portfolio. No one, I think, is suggesting that they shouldn't be at the table. What is encouraging to me is that they won't be the loudest voice in the room now, and the governor made it very clear that he's going to amplify the voices of others.
In terms of pension reform, you touched upon that with the consolidation of the downstate firefighters and police pensions that were having so many problems. But of course, that big $137 billion cloud over the five public employee pension systems continues to hang over state government here. We've been trying to get that done for years around here, to get something substantive done. The governor, of course, last year came up with some ideas, extending the pay down period for that for another 7 years to get to 90% full funding. He didn't have to do that because there was a windfall of federal dollars. That's not going to happen this year. So will there be serious attempts at pension reform this session?
We should always be looking at ways to reform the pension system in the interest of taxpayers. We also need to recognize that this problem is over 100 years old, and we have never and will never miss a payment to a pensioner in retirement. That said, we've got to look at the long-term equities of this. We also have to appreciate what was done. In 2010, we created a second tier of pension benefits for all new public employees that looks a lot more like Social Security. We're now wrestling with the tier one employees who are still employed or in retirement.
Democratic Senate President Don Harmon, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
For your first appearance in the new role. We appreciate it. We'll have you back soon. Thank
Looking
you so much. In a moment, we'll have the Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady from Bloomington, join us here on Illinois Lawmakers. Your takeaway so far, Amanda, from the way this is being received, Senator Harmon, President Harmon saying that, well, all of the things that the governor talked about today are kind of predicated on that fair tax proposal, as he calls it, passing among voters in the spring.
You know, there's some of that. I'm not sure what the governor talked about is necessarily predicated on that passing. What will be is the future of Illinois and the budget and what we're going to hear from him in a matter of weeks. Many of the things that he touched on, as I presume we will hear very soon from Senator Brady, are things that actually some Republicans have been calling for quite some time. When you look at, for example, the consolidation or ability for voters to eliminate their units of local government.
We're going to let Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady from Bloomington jump right in on that.
Ma'am, Jack, how are you guys doing?
We're great. Good to have you with us, sir.
Good.
Your main thoughts on today's speech by Governor Pritzker?
Well, I think he touched upon things that he needs to focus on a great deal. The corruption issue was touched upon, but there needs to be a lot done here. And it's going to be more challenging for him, I think, than the fact that the members of the General Assembly who have been indicted and removed are Democrats. They're within his own party. But absolutely, we've got to bring a transparency to what elected officials do, and we have to work on that. Property taxes, he touched upon, major emphasis for us. We're losing middle-income families right and left, not just because of the threat of a graduated income tax, but because of high property taxes. And they're really the only way, in my belief that we're going to solve that is to really focus on economic development. The Chicago area may be doing fairly well in the inner city, but the rest of the state, which is why we worked bipartisan way so much last year to bring an infrastructure bill to Illinois that can give us the infrastructure to build our economy. But things are going to have to be done to do this, and they aren't going to be easy things for the left wing of the Democratic Party to grasp or to work with us on. But we're going to keep emphasizing what we can do to create job opportunities and investments in Illinois.
What of that? He did say that Illinois is going to be the best state in the nation for young families to come into. He said enough of the naysaying. Businesses are coming to our state, and they will because of all of these services. Do you buy that, or is there something missing from all of the glory that he talked about there?
Yeah, he's absolutely right that we have that opportunity. The problem is we've fallen behind under Brad Blagojevich and Pat Quinn and others of other states, and we've got a long way to go. It wasn't until the very end of session last year that we got him to agree to some of the business reforms we needed that he alluded to, but not till the very end that we got him to agree. Those need to be at the forefront of our discussion, put in place right away. And frankly, one of the things that disappoints me that he didn't bring up, and I think it is the root of all corruption in Illinois, and it's the mapping process. The fact that the two legislative leaders of the House and the Senate get to draw legislative maps for their own interest. This is the divide we have in Illinois. Yes, we might be a leaning Democrat state, but we're not as strong a state as they've drawn maps for. And those maps and the power of those maps lead to the corruption, in my mind. I think he needs to tell his own party, we need to change the way we map things. That will root out the beginning of what I think is the ultimate corruption in Illinois.
The governor campaigned on the idea of the broad outlines of what most would call a fair map process, but it's a harder sell in his caucuses.
The bill is in the Senate. We have a resolution that could be put on the ballot for the voters to decide. He needs to lead on this.
Have you had a conversation asking him to?
Oh, every time I get a chance, we
and
talk about
his response.
He said, I won't sign an unfair map. I realize the challenge that he has within his own party. Mike Madigan doesn't want to give up the power to draw the map. John Colleton didn't. But the fact of the matter is, we have never seen, I think, Illinoisans pitted against each other as badly as what we see now. And the root of that, I think, begins with this gerrymandered map that serves the political interests of the Democratic Party and not the people of Illinois. Rooting out that corruption in the mapping process will help lead to rooting out all corruption. And we need to emphasize that. And I wish he would have addressed that a little more, and I hope he does.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, getting back to business changes, that is not something that came up often really in the speech. As you noted, that came really at the tail end, a last-minute deal between both parties. What needs to happen in that space for you to be happy? What are you looking for in this session?
Well, I think he needs to take into consideration the disproportionate effect that the minimum wage increases have on businesses throughout the state. Not everybody is Chicago. Can't treat everybody the same way. We have prevailing wages that are different. He needs to ask businesses, what can I do to help you? We've several reforms. I will say, business is one of the biggest concerns I have as a business person, and other people have as a business person, is the property tax burden on businesses as well as families, and the loss of middle-income families. I go back to, what can we do to keep talented middle-income families in the state of Illinois, help make business investments in this state? We took a first step, but the real emphasis has to be more and more and more we can do to attract those businesses. We have a lot to offer. We've got great people, but we're going to have to continue to find ways to incentivize them. And that's going to be difficult for him because the ultra left of his party is not centric on business investment. They're more about social programs, and they've lost focus on what really is the heart of what Illinois needs.
There was a recent story in the news about the state's new automatic voter registration program allowing 545 non-citizens of the state of Illinois to vote, and it's reported that over a dozen of them did. Republicans have asked for a moratorium on it to put the brakes on it. The governor seems to think that it needs to be investigated, but they fixed a lot of the glitches.
We need to find that out. And we can't stay silent on this. There needs to be hearing on this, find out what happened so it doesn't happen again, make sure it is fixed. We can't just take their word for it, or we wouldn't have had the problem in the first place. We have a responsibility to protect the value of every legal vote in Illinois, and that means rooting out any possibility for these problems to occur again. One illegal vote is wrong and needs to be, it diminishes the value of every legal vote.
Leader Brady, you brought up in terms of ethics, he called for more disclosure. You, as you mentioned, are a business owner as well as being leader of the Senate Republicans. What are you willing to share and to make public?
Well, I think we passed a bill out of the Senate that called for more disclosure of loans and other things. I think as legislators, we need to be willing to share our economic interests in their entirety. And we, even to the point the bill we passed out would indicate loans, that we would indicate where resources are coming from and what are those. So
for you and your immediate family members, or who all should be included in that?
I don't see a problem with that. I think that if you're willing to serve in the legislature, you ought to be willing to disclose your financial interests, your spouse's financial interests, people who live in your home, and be able to
business interests, stocks. What all are we talking about?
You know, you get to the difficulty, but I don't think we can go too far here.
There we have it.
What about fixing the situation for Chicago getting its own casino? The bill that was originally passed out of the House and Senate had some conditions on it that made it really untenable for anyone to go in and make a profit on gambling in the city of Chicago, and a lot of other attendant issues along with that. Part of the capital bill that passed out of here with broad bipartisan support last year depended on that Chicago casino.
Well, as indicated before, I have various business interests, and one of them is an interest in the video poker industry that employs people and does things. So I've recused myself from discussion and gaming issues, and I've left that to other members of my caucus.
The renewable energy legislation, what do you believe needs to happen there? I know that the Chamber of Commerce, so again, businesses, don't like what has thus far been proposed. They believe it's going to raise rates when the advocates say, in fact, it's going to do just the opposite. Where do you stand?
Well, we need a thorough discussion. And as the governor alluded to, we shouldn't leave it to the utility companies to write the legislation. I also know that we have to listen to the utility companies and get down to the facts. One of the benefits Illinois has is I travel around the state and visit with counterparts in other states, good, affordable utility rates. And we benefit from that, businesses and homeowners. We can't throw that out and lose that advantage that we have. So there needs to be a healthy discussion. We need to listen to utilities, but we need to verify some things, particularly given the scandal of corruption, the investigations around the utility industry that are going on right now. But we cannot leave them out of the discussion because they know things that we need to know to provide the proper legislation.
Leader Brady, thank you so much for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. We appreciate it. We'll see you back here in 3 weeks for the budget message.
We will.
Thank you so much.
I hope we have a healthy discussion on that. Thank you.
I'm sure.
Absolutely. Amanda, thanks so much. As we were talking, of course, property tax relief is going to have to be a big part of moving the state forward. Leader Brady, of course, alluded to that in no uncertain terms. One of the toughest ones, though, ever to try to get fixed in the state of Illinois.
You know, Jack, I'm not sure how serious a dent. Certainly, consolidation will change things for some municipalities and for some voters. But as I believe you heard, it was President Herman indicate, really what drives property taxes is spending on schools. And I don't foresee any major action happening this legislation that's going to flip the dynamic there.
Well, we have an opportunity to get a House Democratic view on property tax relief and a wide range of issues with Assistant House Majority Leader Representative Kelly Burke of Oaklawn. Good to have you with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Your main takeaway from today's speech with Governor Pritzker, it was kind of a series of victory laps in a lot of respect.
Really positive message. I was thrilled to hear about a lot of his enthusiasm for things that are near and dear to my heart, which include more investment in higher education and also the focus on clean energy. I think it's great to see the governor lead on that and looking forward to moving with that. You know, we've got a great opportunity to strengthen our higher education system, provide more affordable, better access for students, and really try and chip away at that kind of couple years long decline of students staying in state for school. We're providing more opportunities for students who maybe have looked elsewhere in the past.
I'm going to give a note to our master controls along the way. We're going to have a non-standard length on today's program. We're going to go a little past the top of the hour on this edition of Illinois Lawmakers on public television and public radio. The governor said that it's time for the utility companies to stop negotiating their own bills.
Yeah, I think it'll be a different dynamic with the bills. I think the CEJA is a great framework, and looking forward to seeing, you know, where that can really go. But it's a new day, and it's going to be a new way of looking at these comprehensive bills, and I applaud him.
Now, on the ethics front, the governor, we got some actual specifics in terms of what he is looking for there. Democrats thus far have really been the ones making headlines for being arrested. In fact, again, one of your former colleagues had to resign. What needs to happen? Is it bills? Is there a culture shift that needs to occur in Springfield to stop this from constantly occurring?
That's a great observation, because I think it really will be both. You need the law, obviously, to reinforce. And, you know, the law is in place, was in place for a lot of
bribery's,
you know,
always been illegal,
right? These jaw-dropping, you know, revelations in the plea document, as well as some of the other indictments. But you're right; it needs to be a culture change.
How
as
does
well.
That happen?
I think it is the law reinforced by an understanding of we are here to serve the public, not to serve ourselves. And the overwhelming majority of people have that expectation and that dedication, and just keeping the pressure up and keeping vigilant on the folks who unfortunately don't do that is something we're going to have to undertake as public officials in relations, you know, in discussions with our own colleagues.
Has the House Democratic Caucus in particular had that conversation?
Not in particular. I mean, we've had some of the, Ethics Commission meetings, and as we plow through some of the specifics, the devil is in the details in a lot of this, and, you know, if you've been watching those meetings, you know there's a lot of details. We have another one tomorrow, and I think once we get a couple, meetings under our belt where we kind of start to understand the scope of what we can and should do, then we'll be having more conversations caucus-wide.
One of the topics that the governor hit upon, of course, today was the need for ethics reform, with the cloud still hanging over the Capitol and the caucuses here. In recent days, what was former Senator Sandoval's guilty plea yesterday on bribery charges, he called for an end to the revolving door practice for lawmakers to become lobbyists. That's been one that Illinois has been kind of an outlier on for decades.
Yeah, and I think it's something we've already talked about at the Ethics Commission. I think looking at what other states do, there's obviously a revolving door provision already at the executive level, and I think it's definitely something under consideration.
What about lawmakers continuing to lobby for municipalities? That's something he wants to see ended as well.
I think we'll look at that too. What you see is there's a looking at the definition of lobbying versus being an accountant who's just advocating for a client, or a lawyer's advocating for a client. I think that, again, the devil is in the details on some of these. And so, I think it's something we're going to look at, but looking holistically at what constitutes lobbying, because there's lots of different definitions of what that is.
How do you define advocacy, for one thing?
Exactly.
You know, so it was a very active first year.
Oh, my gosh.
And we heard a lot about that again. In terms of what the governor talked about next, again, it's environmental action when it comes to energy policy, ethics, property taxes. How much do you foresee what he talked about in terms of allowing municipalities to consolidate, to be eliminated? How big a difference could that make in helping somebody's property tax bill go down?
I think it could affect it, but on the margins, because for most property taxpayers, the biggest portion, between 65 and almost 80%, depending on your district, goes to your schools, your community college, your high school, your grade school. And that is a result of the way that we historically funded education. With the evidence-based model, we are putting a substantial amount of money, much-needed money, into schools so that they can hopefully eventually wean themselves off of property tax dollars and have more state dollars coming in. So I think that's important. But consolidation, it can help. It can help more efficiency. It can help redundant areas of government. But the actual dollars that might be saved are probably less than people would imagine.
In terms of overall pension reform, of course, we talked about the downstate firefighters and police departments' pension consolidation from last year. The bigger one, of course, has to do with public employees and retired judges, retired lawmakers, university employees, teachers. Is that one going to get done this spring as we wrap up?
To have those consolidated?
No, to have pension. The governor, of course, had an idea toward extending the pension payout, down cycle over the years, kind of lengthening the ramp for it. Is he going to be able to do that in the session, or is this going to be
one? I think there's resistance to that. It in the end, costs more over time, you know, when you do that. And I think what we're trying to do is wrap our arms around getting this backlog paid down. So I would not think that it's going to be very popular.
At the end of the day, your former House colleague, Elaine Neckerts, who was an expert on pensions, said at the end of the day, we're going to have to pay the bill.
And that's what I think people have to really come to grips with, that there's no magic formula that's going to, or you can't wish this liability away. And we're going to have to come to grips with it and figure out how we're going to pay it in a responsible manner.
Assistant House Majority Leader Kelly Burke, we thank you for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. Glad to have you on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Come back again soon. Thank you so much. As we get ready to wrap up here in just a moment with the House Republican Leader Jim Durkin, we're still waiting to see in 3 weeks from now, what will be in the governor's budget proposal.
Riding on that graduate.
Well, he's told the state agencies you may have a 6.5% cut to your budget because we've still got $7 billion in overdue bills.
They're being told to prepare for that. It's something that I think a lot of people point out when you speak to the governor's critics. They say, yes, everything sounds great, free something for everybody, and yet where is the money going to come from? We will hear that answer, as you noted, in 3 weeks, perhaps, or at least we'll be asking those questions.
There was a lot of discussion about bipartisan results around here. Leader Durkin, good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Jack. Glad to be here.
As we look ahead here, a lot of things in that first year of Governor Pritzker's tenure were they weren't easy to do, but it was easier to get bipartisan agreement on big issues like the Capitol bill, because all the districts in the state benefited from that. But there's going to be a big lift on a lot of things here in the spring session.
You know, I'm glad to be part of it, and I'm glad to be part of this lifting process if the governor wants our support. As we found out at the end of May last year, is that Republican priorities, our thoughts, did mean something at the end, and our votes were important. And the governor understands it. I've talked to him a number of times since we broke from session last May about how he wants to continue on with this bipartisan working attitude. And I will say this for purposes of the speech today. I can't recall the last time I said something positive about a Democrat governor's speech, but I was encouraged by what he had to say about what we were able to accomplish collectively. And I take him at his word that the major issues will be done in a bipartisan, collaborative manner.
He talked, of course, about the scourge of corruption hanging over the Illinois State House. 11 years ago today, former Governor Rod Blagojevich became former Governor Rod Blagojevich after he was removed from office.
Yes.
You were a part of the proceedings on that. How do you restore confidence in government in Illinois, if there ever was?
Look, we could have started back in November when we had some very easy ethics reform initiatives about banning a lobbyist from a legislator from serving as a lobbyist. That's a common sense, easy solution. That's not one of the solutions. We also need to do a better job with our economic interest statements. But let me also say this, that we're going through starting a process about the redistricting of legislative seats in the House and Senate and also congressional seats. The power of these chambers lies with the person who draws the map. It ensures the majority will hold for that decade. And I will say this, is that power is which has caused this lack of confidence that people have in Illinois regarding ethics. But I would say that redistricting reform will be probably the strongest way in which we can clean up this cesspool that has been created down here because of one-party rule.
So will you consider ethics having been checked off the list in terms of what Illinois needs to do unless that legislative redistrict map drawing process has been overhauled?
Ethics reform is, the Democrats have a willing partner in me to solve this problem. It shouldn't be something that takes that long, but it really comes down to the Speaker, Speaker Madigan, and the President of the Senate. We'll see how willing they are to put an end to some of these practices that are playing out in the federal court as of yesterday. And we're going to see another former member, one of the majority leaders, will plead guilty next week, too, because they use their office for personal gain. We can only do so much on legislative ethics, but we're going to do as much as we can.
He talked about one of the top issues for Republicans around this building for decades, and that was property tax reform. What's got to be done to have meaningful property tax reform with over 7,000 units of local governments, many of them school districts?
Sure. I think the governor, we started the process in which we are going to at least assist the local governments with the pension consolidation. That's important. That's just a start. But property tax reform has been around this building for decades, and it has never gone anywhere. We had a commission that was put together last summer, which did not accomplish much other than ask for tax increases and some ideas that just weren't working. We have to do better with, I think, consolidating governments at the local level. I mean, we've heard that again for so many years. Governor Rauner put together a commission on that. It never went anywhere because of the Democrat leadership didn't want to give him any success. I know how that works.
Given all that, does the governor now giving voice to empowering voters to eliminate those units of local government mean that this will happen? He's got a pretty amazing track record of checking off the major initiatives from his list.
Well, there's a reason why many of those issues of consolidation and no meaningful property tax reform have failed. It's because of the Democrat leadership in both chambers. But the governor right now has the bully pulpit, and I would say that the Democrat leaders and their members need to go along with this governor because he has been able to find ways to get great things done in a very short amount of time. I've told him that he has a willing partner with me on property tax reform, ethics reform, and every major issue that we have before this body. I'm going to keep an open mind. I got things done with this governor last May. Many people thought we would never have that opportunity or ability to get something done because we're in the minority.
For our radio stations and television stations along the way, we're going to wrap up in about 3 minutes with Leader Durkin. In 3 weeks, the governor is going to be back here, 12 o'clock noon on February the 19th, to give his budget address. He touched upon one of his major priorities, and that's the graduated income tax, which will be before voters in the fall. That is anathema for Republicans here in the House and the Senate.
Look, we didn't support it. There was no support for that question to be brought to the voters. I personally believe it's a bad idea, bad for small businesses, but bad for Illinois employers, and eventually it's going to hurt Illinois taxpayers instead of helping them. So, again, we're going to negotiate a budget this May, and it's not going to be based on hypothetical money that we may or may not see after the constitutional amendment. But we have to live within our means. It's very simple. We say that all the time. But we did spend a lot of money in last year's budget. We did it without having any increases in taxes because we were able to get assistance from the federal government. I hope the governor is not going to ask for any more participation of Illinois citizens from their pocketbook to help solve the budget problems that we may be encountering. We can negotiate anything. We negotiated many things, and sometimes we've got to take some tough cuts in state government. I hope that's the direction that the governor wants to go. I'm willing to negotiate again with him on the budget, and I hope he takes my advice and also counsel from my members.
Since he's talking about the potential of a 6.5% across-the-board agency budget cut, that's going to hit a lot of people and a lot of agencies very tough if that happens. But can it be done without raising? Can the overall budget targets, without this $1 billion and the federal windfall that came from federal tax receipts last year, can it be accomplished without new taxes?
Absolutely, we can do that. I mean, if somebody says that they've been able to, there's no meat left on the bone in state government, I think they're wrong. And there are plenty of places that we can restructure within state government, reduce the costs, and some of the unnecessary overhead that we've seen time year in, year out. So I'm confident that we were able to meet those obligations. I'm not sure if we need to go 6.25%, but there clearly should be some reductions in state agencies. But I think we can get there without actually inflicting any problems or harm on the public who rely upon state government.
You know, Leader, you talked about it, the governor lacking to address gerrymandering, redistricting. Beyond that, anything that you didn't hear from his address that you were hoping that he would mention, or just in general, your take on the notion, how much better is Illinois to live in these days? He says, we're going to make it the best for families and for businesses. That's already being done. Do you agree?
Well, I think that right now, Illinois is in a better position than it was, has been in a number of years. We're at 3.25% on unemployment, which is fantastic. But I will say that mainly that's from the national economy that's driven that. I can't say what we've done over the past 6 months has contributed towards that. I know in time it will. But we need to be able to be mindful of keeping this unemployment rate down. We need. I wish there was more discussion about job creation and economic development. And I have talked to the governor about that privately, but I wish there was more that he was able to add to those particular issues. You know, he made great, he went to great length to talk about the unemployment in Illinois. Let's keep it that way. Let's keep driving that number down. But I didn't hear much of that today of how we're going to get there.
Leader Durkin, we're going to end on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back in 3 weeks to talk about this after the budget address. Thank you so much. We look forward to seeing you then as well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And, of course, thanks, as always, to my colleague from Chicago tonight at WTTW and Channel 11 in Chicago, Amanda Vinicky. That's it for this edition of Illinois Lawmakers. Thanks for watching. We will be back on February 19th at 12 o'clock noon here on Illinois Public Television and Radio.